Morning. Back to Dietrich Bonhoeffer here for a minute. If you were here 2 weeks ago, you know I mentioned Bonhoeffer's book, Life Together, and I actually want to share a passage with us up front. If I may, I'm going to ask us to read the passage out loud together as we sometimes do, usually do. I'm not going to have us do feedback, though, just for time's sake this morning, but I do want us to read this passage out loud just as a way of kind of entering into this morning's message. Let me say about Bonhoeffer, like I said last time, his language skews toward the masculine in terms of his use of nouns and pronouns, that sort of thing. So let's just overlook that if we can and just try and hear what he's saying to us today. Cool? All right. Read with me. God has put his word into the mouth of men in order that it may be communicated to other men. God has willed that we should seek and find his living word in the witness of a brother in the mouth of man. Therefore, the Christian needs another Christian who speaks God's word to him. He needs him again and again when he becomes uncertain and discouraged. For by himself, he cannot help himself without belying the truth. The Christ in his own heart is weaker than the Christ in the word of his brother. His own heart is uncertain. His brother's is sure. Very good. Well, as I've mentioned, I have been in graduate school the last couple years in creative writing, studying creative writing. And so as a result of that, I've been thinking pretty deliberately about the way that language works and the way words work in relationship to one another, you know, the way that you arrange words to achieve certain effects. And that's in essence what I want to talk to us about this morning. If I may, I want to talk about the way we as a community of faith use language, the way that we steward words, the way that we use words specifically to encourage one another. And I started thinking about this probably, I guess, 3 or 4 years ago now, and I got a note in the mail from a friend of mine, Becca Spears. Some of you know Becca. She has a photography business here in town, and Becca and I go way back. We were friends in college. We did ministry together for a couple years, so I've gotten to see a little bit of her vocational path unfold. And here's the thing about Becca. She is really, really good as a photographer. I'm not talking about someone who, you know, just gets the focus right and gets the right person in the frame or whatever and is a little bit organized so they can run their own business. You know, I'm talking about someone with this incredibly artistic eye, this aesthetic sensibility and vision that is just pretty stunning, you know? We know these kinds of people, right? And there was a period of time, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, when I was just living here in Kansas City, going about my life, and over the course of about a week, I ran into two different people who, unprompted by me, just started talking about Becca's photography. And so the first conversation, they're like, yeah, have you seen her portfolio? You've got to go online and check it out. And I'm going, yeah, no, I'm with you. I agree. It's incredible. She's brilliant. The second conversation comes around, and I'm like, no, I'm with you. Yes, very cool. She is a really good photographer. I'm also thinking, you know, I should probably tell Becca at some point that people are really excited about her work. But I don't. Because, you know, you get preoccupied, you get distracted, right? You just kind of forget to do that sort of thing. And then within that same week, I ended up hearing this sermon by this guy who was talking about how critically important it is for people who are followers of Jesus to take excellence seriously in whatever it is that they're doing, to kind of devote themselves in whatever craft, whatever profession they're a part of, to just devote themselves to excellence, to work as if they are working for God, right? And he started saying, you know, when the church catches that vision and when people begin to move into every aspect of culture and really begin to strive for excellence and really become these kinds of people, there's going to be a tipping point for the church in their cities, in the world. The church is going to begin to have more influence. The church is going to become a blessing in more and more profound ways when the people of God take that idea seriously. And I'm listening to this guy talk, and I'm thinking, that's Becca. Like, she's doing that with her life, you know? And so it finally got me off the dime, and I called her up, and I think it was a Saturday afternoon. She was out shooting a wedding somewhere, so I just left her this voicemail and just said, hey, just want you to know there's a buzz around Becca Spears photography. Like, people are really into your work. I had these two conversations. I listened to this sermon this week. Here's what the guy said. I just want you to know I think you're one of these kinds of people. I think because of your work ethic and your giftedness and whatever else, you're going to have influence here in Kansas City. I'm just saying I'm proud of you, and keep going. Keep doing what you're doing. And I hung up the phone, went on about my life pretty much, didn't really think about it, until a few days later, I then get this note from Becca in the mail. This is where this story's going. So it doesn't say anything real profound, but she articulates this idea that I'm trying to get across to us, as she says it so well. She starts, "Isaac, my dear friend, I just got home from shooting a wedding to receive your wonderfully encouraging voicemail. Thank you." And then here's the line. She says, "I believe that promptings to encourage that are obeyed change people's lives. I believe promptings to encourage that are obeyed change people's lives." And I remember I was reading down this note, and I got to that point just on the first pass, and I thought, of course. Of course that's true. And it's so well put. And it's just, I think I had forgotten. Somewhere along the line, it kind of reminded me of this thing that I'd forgotten. It's not that I had forgotten to encourage people, once in a while. I mean, it had taken me a few days, but I'd made the phone call, right? It's not that I'd forgotten to encourage people. It wasn't that I'd forgotten that encouragement is generally a good idea. I think we can all subscribe to this notion, can we not? That if you're going to be a nice person, maybe once in a while, you should say something nice to someone who's struggling or, doing something really well. We're on board with this concept, are we not? The thing that I think I'd forgotten was that somewhere along the line, I had forgotten the power that language has in the life of human beings, the way that a word, a few different words spoken in the right time with real intention and real care can change the trajectory of another person's life. And I had forgotten that fact. And that's pretty much the message this morning in a nutshell. It's really straightforward. Promptings to encourage that are obeyed have the potential to change people's lives. And my sense is that I don't really need to convince us of that fact today as much as I just need to remind us that that's true. Right? Because it's so easy to forget, is it not? So easy to forget, particularly in the culture that we live in. You and I live in a world that is pretty highly disingenuous or superficial at times. We live in a world where language is often used in pretty trivial and vulgar ways. And so we find ourselves every week in interactions where it's like, "Hey, how's it going? Fine, good. You? Great, cool, peace." And you walk away and you're like, "What just happened there?" Nothing. The answer, nothing happened there. It's just like a wave of the hand. That's what that was. Right? And I'm not down, don't hear me saying I'm down on the culture that we live in necessarily. I'm just saying that if we aren't careful, we are just so often bombarded, whether it's on TV or radio or through our cell phone or whatever, we've got language coming at us all day long. And if we don't think about it, if we don't let ourselves be a little bit critical, we might somewhere along the line start to believe that what we say to one another, how we say it, when we say it, all of that stuff doesn't really matter. If we encourage one another or don't encourage one another, it's just really not that big a deal at the end of the day. And yet I have moments burned into my memory that suggest otherwise. Good and bad moments, both. I have moments burned into my memory where someone said something to me and it marked me, And so even now, years later, you know how this is. I can recall the conversation. I can recall the precise wording. I can recall the tone of voice and the setting and the life context and all of that. For better or worse, I think that's probably true for most of us here, that someone at some point along the line in our past has said something to us that has marked us. And if we take a moment, we can bring those things back. That's the kind of power that language has in the life of people. And the scriptures, they aren't really confused about this idea. They're pretty clear. If you start to read through the Bible and look for this theme, it just begins to kind of rise to the surface. I'll give us a couple verses here just up front. Proverbs 18:21 says it like this: "Death and life," says, "are in the power of the tongue." That's a pretty bold statement. You agree? Death and life are in the power of the tongue. You go over to the New Testament, the book of James, it's pretty much saying the same thing. James at one point is talking about how the tongue is this really small instrument in comparison with the rest of the body, and yet it has this power that is just way incommensurate with its size. And James says at one point, the tongue is a flame, or the tongue is a fire. It's like this little spark, it can set a whole forest ablaze. And in essence, what James is saying to you and I is we need to realize that when we speak to one another, whether we open our mouths to bless or to curse one another, we need to understand that language is incendiary, it is combustible. And so when we open our mouths to speak, we need to understand we're playing with fire. It's kind of like this. We don't let kids play with these, right? I don't have kids. I don't think we let kids play with these. Is that Still the rule, pretty much? Yeah. You know, the reason we don't let kids play with these, we understand this very basic concept, right? That something this small has a power, a capacity resident within it. It can unleash a power that is way, way out of proportion to its size, right? And given the right circumstances, something like this can set off a chain reaction. Given the right amount of material or the right weather pattern, wind or whatever, the right amount of moisture or lack thereof, under the right circumstances, something like this can set off a chain reaction and it can decimate a forest overnight. And this happens every year, right? At least every other year. Someone gets careless, someone lights a match in the wrong place, someone dumps over coals in the wrong place, leaves the campfire burning, and all of a sudden, just hundreds of acres up in smoke. It happened, I think, in Arizona recently in the last 6 months. Someone got careless, left a fire burning, actually got arrested because he was so careless. And then people are rushing around trying to figure out how to contain the blaze. And James says, in the same way, something as small as a word, when spoken in the right moment with someone's whole self, someone's whole force of personality behind it, a word can start a chain reaction in someone that ultimately leads to death or life in that person's soul. Something as small as a word can light a fire under somebody that over time leads to pain and hurt and embarrassment and fear and anger. And as that fire grows, to discouragement or to depression, even to death, right? And likewise, in the same way, something as small as a word can light a fire under someone that allows them to experience a sense of peace that they have not had recently. It gives them an experience of joy that they hadn't anticipated, brings about a kind of healing in their lives that they weren't looking for. A word can allow someone a sense of freedom or a sense of confidence and strength in who they are and the way that God is working in their lives. All of that can happen with a word. Why? Because death and life are in the power of the tongue. And so I just want to invite us this morning as a community of faith to, even though we live in a world that is incredibly trivial at times, where language, where words are cheap and often vulgar, I want to invite us to begin to reclaim their holiness and their power, their potential, and to begin to spend words on one another, to really figure out how to lavish words, language on one another, so that the image of God that he has placed within each one of us, the men and women that he has made us to be uniquely in our full maturity and health and freedom, so that that image placed within each one of us will begin to grow more and more bright, will be set aflame in our lives as we live in relationship with one another and speak the truth to one another. Are you with me? Yeah. So Hebrews, that letter, if you begin to read through it, you get to this place, Hebrews chapter 3, where the author says this one line. I'm just going to give us one verse this morning. It's going to be our central text. I'm going to ask us to read it out loud. Read with me. It says, encourage one another daily, as long as it is called today, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness. Let's read it one more time. Encourage one another daily, as long as it is called today, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness. Encourage one another daily, he says. It's interesting, if you go and look at that word, encourage, in the Greek, it literally means to call near or to call to one side. And so the picture that I get is of someone coming up to somebody else and putting their arm around them, you know, and being like, hey, come over here. I want to tell you something. I've noticed you lately. I'd heard about something in your life. I just want to say something to you. Just, you know, come over here. Just, it'll just be a second. It's okay. Just, you know, let me speak truth to you. Let me remind you what it is that, you know, God is doing with you. Let me remind you he's faithful. Just, I mean, come over here a second. And the author of Hebrews says, here's the thing. If you're a follower of Jesus, if you're a member of his church, don't ever stop doing that. Do it constantly. Do it consistently, daily, as long as it's called today. And why would he say it that way? I'm not sure, to be honest, but here's a couple thoughts on the matter. I think he might be saying it that way because the author of Hebrews understands that as long as it's called today, you and I are going to have reasons to despair. First off, right? As long as it's called today, you and I are going to wake up today, tomorrow, the next day, and we're going to turn on the television, and there's going to be oil just sitting stagnant in the Gulf. There's going to be some conflict brewing in some part of the world that we can't even pronounce, and we don't really understand or have any control over. The economy is going to have taken some dip that's just discouraging to us. Iran is going to be fueling some nuclear reactor. Israel and Palestine are going to start talking about peace, a peace agreement again, and the analysts are going to go, that's dead in the water before it even starts. That's not even worth spending time with. There's going to be plenty of opportunity, plenty of things just out in the wider world tempting us to despair. And if that's true in the wider world, it's certainly true in our own lives, is it not? And I think the author of Hebrews understands this fact, and yet I think he also understands this thing, that promptings to encourage that are obeyed, they do something kind of mysterious. They get in between us and whatever negativity we are confronted with in that given moment. Like, they begin to refute that negativity or contradict it, or they begin to nuance the message that we're receiving. They begin to try and kind of, they start knocking us onto a different path than the path of despair. And so the author of Hebrews says to the early church, and by the way, this is a church that is undergoing some pretty severe persecution. These are people that have reason to be discouraged and really afraid. And he comes to the early church, I would say by extension, he comes to us. And he says, here's the thing. If you guys are going to stay together as followers of Jesus, if you're going to even make it, if you're going to stay on the path, you better figure out pretty quickly how to huddle together, how to be a family, how to get in one another's corner and be on each other's team. You better figure out how to encourage one another. You better figure out how to come alongside one another. If you see something good happening in somebody's life, you better call that out of them. If you see someone drifting, deviating to the right or the left, then when it's appropriate in the right time, you better call them out. You better call each other near. You better put your arms around each other and stand with each other and get each other's backs and remind each other daily of the truth. That God is faithful, that he knows about your life, that he sees you, that he has intentions for you that you don't know anything about, that wherever you go, there he is. You better remind each other that you are not alone, that the things that you're feeling, other people feel those things. The things that you're struggling with, other people in this community struggle with those things. You better remind each other that the story is better than you think, and that as dark of a season as you are in right now, as difficult as life has become, the good news is this. This is God's world, and you're God's child, and so ultimately you're going to be okay. Let me just ask us, in a given week, in a given month of our lives, how many of us feel we could use some encouragement along those lines? Just show of hands. Because here's my sense of it. I don't know about you, but I think that most of us, most of the time, are on the brink. You know? Most of us are just a couple bad conversations, a couple bad days away from just absolutely losing it. You know, I'm that way. I mean, I had one of these days last month, my car got towed. I don't even want to talk about it. Most of us have plenty of reason to get discouraged and just kind of angry about what's going on in our lives, right? It's always going to be that way. Some of us have work issues right now. We're in a job that we hate. And yet it's providing for us, it's providing for our family, and we're, you know, going, I don't really have any other options here, and yet we're driving to work and we're driving home at the end of the day, and we're just going, like, what am I doing with my life? Some of us, as we talked about a few weeks ago, we're looking for a job that we could hate. Right? And we're going, you know, I've exhausted all the options. I've knocked on every door. I've made every phone call. I've emailed people. I've shaken hands. Like, I've got my CV out there, my resume. I'm doing the thing, and there's just no opportunities. Everything's dried up, and I'm not sure how much longer I can go on like this. It's discouraging to us. Some of us have issues in our primary relationships, whether it's with our spouse or our kids or our parents or just good friends of ours. And, you know, we go to sleep at night, and then when we wake up in the morning, it hits us. Oh, yeah, I'm dealing with that thing. Some of us have health issues, and it's costly and inconvenient, and we don't see any end in sight, and it's just very discouraging to us. As long as it's called today, you and I are going to have issues, and I think the reality is this, that for many of us, some of the most important moments in our next year are not going to be those times where we accomplish something that's going to end up on our resume. It's going to be the moments when somebody that we know leaves whatever it is that they're doing for a minute and comes over to us and puts their arm around us and says to us, I know about your life. I know what you're dealing with. I'm just here to tell you, don't give up. Just don't give up. And I've just been waking up lately to this fact that every one of us has the ability to be that person. You know? Every single one of us can play that role. There might be some of us here who are more gifted at that than others or are more predisposed to speaking up in a given moment, but every single person can speak into the life of someone else words of real substance, not empty, vacuous words, but words that matter in a given moment. We can all play that role. And so if I can, just let me offer up maybe two or three things that I think we might be able to do if we're going to get into this habit, if we're going to be the kind of people who encourage one another daily. These are three things that I think might be required of us individually. And the first is this: I think we're going to need to tune in to each other. Here's what I mean by that. It's been called the ministry of presence. What I mean is, when you sit down with someone, if you're getting coffee, if you're getting lunch, if you're talking to someone at church, it's going to require us to do that really difficult thing where we shift the focus off of ourselves. We stop thinking about what we're going to say next, what we're going to share next, and we really try and hear and see the person in front of us. And we aren't just listening to the words they're speaking, we're listening to the words behind the words, right? We know that 7% of communication is verbal, 93% is nonverbal, right? So that means that there's going to be a whole lot of stuff to pay attention to: a person's affect, a person's body language. It means that we're going to really be try to be fully present to them and really hear what's going on, so that if we're given the opportunity to say something really small or maybe to say something really big, it's just going to mean we'll be ready for it. We'll know what's required. And let me just be clear here. I am not suggesting that we just all start to read into everybody's statements all the time, because that's obnoxious. You agree? Not saying that. I'm not saying we go overboard, but I am saying that we begin to practice this ministry of presence where we go, okay, for right now, I'm here with this person, and I'm going to try and block out everything else, including myself. And let me just say, for me, the people who speak most powerfully into my life, historically speaking, those people are the people that get really detailed and specific about whatever it is that I'm dealing with. They're the people that can say to me, you know, I know this week that you had this meeting and this meeting and this meeting, and I know that you had this other issue that you've been dealing with, and yet you made this decision, and I think that was a really good decision. That decision right there took some courage because of this. And I go, you have credibility with me because you know about my life, and you've gotten really specific. We'll need to tune in to each other. We'll also need to tune in to God. We all understand this is a hard thing to do, right? We need to try to tune into God, which means, again, if we come to a place like this on a Sunday morning, rather than walking in here and going, okay, where am I sitting today, and who's going to speak, and what songs are we singing, do I like those songs, and who do I need to talk to while I'm here, and what do I need to accomplish this afternoon? I wonder where I'm going to go to lunch after this. I hope I get a nap in. Instead of doing that, we walk in here and we just say, God, I'm available. You know? I just want to be available to you. I'm assuming today that you're going to bring people across my path that I might be able to speak to, some word of encouragement, something that matters to them. You're going to need to give me eyes to see them and ears to hear what they're really saying, and then you're going to need to give me your words. Without you, Spirit of God, I'm nothing here, so I'm going to need your help, but I'm available. And then the third thing I think we'll need to do is we're going to just need to be obedient. There are going to be moments where we get a prompting kind of out of nowhere. We see somebody, we don't even know that person that well, and yet we've, you know, felt like we needed to say something to this person, and we're gonna feel drawn in that direction, and we're gonna have then all of these justifications that arise as to why we shouldn't do that, at least not right now. But there's that whole part, you know, Becca says promptings to encourage that are obeyed. There's that whole little caveat there that we need to pay attention to, you know? And I'll be honest with you, this is where I let myself off the hook. This is where I get really, really lazy at times for a whole variety of reasons, one of them being pride. If I see someone doing something really well, something they should be complimented on, sometimes I'm like, you know, I wish I were good at that thing, and so I don't really want to tell them that they're really good at that thing because I'm kind of annoyed. So I think I'll just reserve comment, you know? Sometimes it's pride. Sometimes it's this sense of like, oh, you know, that person already knows. They already know. They've heard that from other people before. Who am I to say that to them again? I don't want to be redundant. Sometimes, Mike and I were talking about this week, sometimes it's just awkward, right? Mike just came back from a trip with his son Cole, where he was given this opportunity to speak some pretty powerful things into his son's life. And he said the guy leading the trip talked about it. His phrase for it was a holy awkwardness. And we were like, that's exactly it. It's just so, sometimes it's just weird. It's just uncomfortable. And you're like, I don't really know how to say this. You know, I'm not that eloquent, but just, you know, bear with me. I want to tell you this thing. And it's awkward, and yet it can be very powerful. We'll have to tune into one another and tune into God, and then we'll have to be willing to be obedient, to step forward, to say something, to speak up. Let me also be clear here. I am not trying to push some kind of formulaic deal on us where we just become this people where all of a sudden we're going around and we're spreading this bland plastic encouragement everywhere we go. That would be a step in the wrong direction, in my opinion. I think on the contrary, the people that begin to live this way, that take this idea seriously and just open themselves to what God is doing in a community and really have this posture, this willing posture, those are the people that begin to experience some of the most surprising, creative, beautiful encounters with other human beings. There's nothing formulaic about those people. I remember the first time I preached here, I mentioned it a few weeks ago, I was sitting right over here before I got up here to speak, and a friend of mine, a mentor of mine, Father Adam, he's a friend of Jacob's Well, he's spoken here before, he had come to the service to just be with me, and so we're sitting together over here in a pew, and there's about one song left before I'm going to get up and I'm going to speak, and again, I've prepared, but I, you know, you can never be completely prepared, and so I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden it hits me. I am completely not qualified to do what I'm about to do right here. Like, this was a bad decision. I don't know what I was thinking. Oh my gosh, what is about to happen? I'm just like freaking out. And I lean over to Father Adam at one point. I'm kind of in a panic. I remember it really clearly. I lean over and I go, I shouldn't be speaking to these people. In this brilliant moment, Father Adam, he leans over, he hears me and he kind of nods his head and then he leans back. Great. He leans back and says, yeah, I know. If I were you, I'd be terrified. It was just perfect, you know? It was perfect. And it was just this moment where I recalibrated and it was like, oh yeah, it's not about being qualified, is it? You know, it's about God being faithful. It's about God being strong when I'm weak. It had the Spirit of God all over it. So I'm not talking about a technique. I'm talking about this posture of the heart where we say, God, I want to be one of those kinds of people. I want to be someone through whom your favor and your blessing begins to come into contact with other people. I want to leave a legacy of blessing in my wake, my interactions with others. Will you just help me? I want to be that kind of person. I think about people that have done that for me over the last several years in my life. One of them, my friend, a mentor of mine, Glenn Kaler. I remember this is years before grad school was really on my radar screen. I remember we were at lunch one day, and he was asking me about my interest in writing and in books, and I was telling him, yeah, you know, I mean, I like to read, I like to write. I'm not sure that I'm going to, you know, pursue that. To be honest, I'm not sure I have what it takes. I mean, writing is a really hard road, and you've got to kind of be smart sometimes, and you've got to really work hard, and it's a 20-year burn and all this stuff. I'm like, I'm just not sure. And Glenn, just impromptu, pulls out of his pocket, I don't have one, but pulls out a $10 bill. We're sitting at lunch, pulls out a $10 bill, slaps it on the table and says, here's the thing. I'm putting good money on the fact that you're a writer. You heard it here first. You have what it takes to do what you're talking about. So this is you and I right now. We're betting. All right? And lo and behold, Glenn ends up being one of the few crucial people that helped me make the transition out of ministry into graduate school. And if I ever write something that makes more than $10, I'm going to send it back to him. I still have the $10 bill in my desk drawer in Columbus, Ohio. I'm going to send it back to him and say, you win. Or I think about January of this last year, and I was in grad school now. I had just come back from winter break, and I was getting ready to start another quarter, and I just had this few days where I was just feeling pretty discouraged about the state of my life, the trajectory of my life. I was feeling a little lost. Had a lot of stuff going through my head, like, really, was this the right decision? I'm not sure that it was. I'm not sure what I'm doing here. And so I decided to set aside an evening for about 2 or 3 hours where I was just going to be quiet and just try and pray and be present to God, see what he had to say to me. Got through the 3 hours. Nothing really substantial happened. And then I got an email from Paul DeWeese here at Jacob's Well. Literally, I stopped praying. I decided I'm going to be done at 12 o'clock. And somewhere in between 11:30 and 12 o'clock, Paul had emailed me. Paul and I don't communicate a whole lot, maybe like twice, three times a year. And I get this email. Hey, Isaac, hope you're having a good break. Over the last few weeks, I've been awoken in the middle of the night with a strong prompting to pray for you. There it is, by the way, promptings to encourage that are obeyed. I sometimes refer to this, he says, as compelled prayer, as it is not something I was thinking about. But I felt this, he goes on to say, at three different nights at around 3 a.m., I woke up and I felt this strong prompting around the word ambassador. And he goes on to say he meditated on some scriptures that contain the word ambassador and tried to think about what it is that God might be saying to me around that word, and shares the scriptures with me and then says, as I prayed and meditated on it, I felt like it was connected to your writing. Says a couple more things. And then he says, I do feel that this may be some kind of confirmation or encouragement that you are doing the right thing pursuing your writing education. For what it's worth. I emailed him back and said, Paul, you have no idea. I think about moments when people, someone in my life has said something to me that has been really hurtful, really unfair. Someone has cut me down at some point, and the way I've been reeling from that emotionally. Now, someone who's close to me, a friend of mine, has come up to me and said, I just want you to know, I know about what that person said. I want you to hear from me. I disagree. I'm taking issue with what that person said. I don't think it's true. I think it's unfair. I think it's inaccurate. I'm saying to you, you can walk away from that right now. You don't have to spend any more time on that question as to whether that's true about you, because it's not. So you're free to just like ignore it and go on your way. And I think about the way that has kept me from spiraling downward and released me into this new kind of freedom, you know? The point this morning is not that we all need to write encouragement notes, although some of us should. And the point is not that we need to all subscribe to some kind of formula. Here's the point. Every single one of us needs to hear words like this. Every single person needs to hear someone say to them, not just that God loves them, but that someone else loves them, that they are loved by another human being. Every one of us needs to hear that there are people who want to be with us, that people who think that we're cool, people who think that we actually have something to contribute to the community or to the world. Every one of us needs to hear that we're attractive or intelligent or just highly necessary to whatever it is that's going on. Every one of us needs to be reminded that we aren't alone. There are people thinking about us and praying for us, people that want to emulate certain things about us, certain personality traits or characteristics. There are some things about us that people really admire. Every one of us needs to hear that over and over and over again. Christ in the heart of our brother is stronger than the Christ in our own hearts. I've been thinking about Mike and this trip he just took with his son, and I've been thinking about parents and their kids here at Jacob's Well. And the way that some parents have not received the kind of inheritance in terms of words spoken to them that they should have received. And so they're at a deficit when it comes to their relationship with their kids here. And I just think about what would happen if some of the parents here begin to take this idea seriously and in very imperfect ways over the next several weeks and months and years decided, I'm going to be this kind of parent who speaks life and confidence into my kid no matter what. Doesn't mean I'm not going to say hard things to them, but they will always know that I am proud of them, that I love them, that I think they have what it takes. And I think about how that kid might then grow up with a greater degree of self-confidence or self-possession and might even get to this place where they get married and they have kids and then they start to reproduce the thing that was modeled for them when they were under their parents' roof. And I think, why would we not want to be a part of that? Why would we not want to participate in that? And then I think about some of the others, the rest of us who don't have kids and might never have kids, and we have also not experienced the kind of inheritance that we wish we would have ideally received from our parents. And yet, because we're in the church, one of the beautiful things about the church is that we have been given the sacred responsibility of parenting one another and speaking into the void of each other's lives. And I'm going, why wouldn't we want to participate in that? And so let me ask one more time, if I may, for the hands, those of us who feel like we could use some encouragement along these lines. Let's just raise them high for a second. Now take a look around the room briefly, if you would. One more question. And keep your hands up for a second. I know it's hard, you know, you're doing well. One more question. How many of us is it going to take to encourage everyone who needs it? Let me push us one more step in closing. Because this isn't just about the people here in this room. We're all aware of that, right? This is about the fact that we as the church are called to be a blessing to the world. So let me just remind you, if you're going into work tomorrow, to a person, almost every single person you encounter at your job tomorrow, they didn't hear that question, but in their heart, they have their hand raised. If you're going back to school here soon, you go on campus, almost every single person you encounter, they didn't hear the question, in their heart, they have their hand raised. This week, almost every single person we encounter here in Kansas City, they have their hand raised. They're going, I could use someone to speak into my life, words of real substance, words of life. I could use that. And it's just not that hard, and every one of us can do it. And so the author of Hebrews says, daily, as long as it's called today, encourage one another. Pray with me. This is really important. I believe that, Father. I believe that scriptures wouldn't talk about the power of the tongue if they didn't want us to actually understand the power of the tongue. And I pray that we would become good stewards of the resources you have given us, specifically just the things that can seem very trivial and superficial, the words that we speak. I pray that you'd use us to speak life and truth and joy and peace in the lives of one another and all the people that we encounter in a given week. We want to be conduits of your grace and your favor. Free us from laziness. Free us from complacency and apathy when it comes to this issue. I pray for the parents here who struggle with living this way towards their kids, and I'm asking that you would give them not a sense of guilt or shame, that they would be completely released from that, but just that they would hear an invitation to begin to experiment with ways of communicating favor to their kids. I'm praying for the same thing with spouses here, that they would not feel any kind of sense of guilt around this issue, but that they would just take this as an invitation to begin to practice speaking words of light and life to one another, regularly, habitually. I'm praying for all of us who need to parent one another because some of us have never been parented, and I'm asking that you would give us a great sensitivity to the Holy Spirit so that we might step into moments that are awkward and yet very, very necessary. We pray these things in your name. Jesus, amen.